7th. Newport Planning Commission is now in session. And we hit the first order is roll call. Robert?
Here.
Jim?
I am here.
I'm here, obviously. Mr. Bob?
Present.
And Mr. I know. I was suspensing it. Mr. Updike?
Here.
He's here too. So Mr. Escobar is not here. But okay, we'll just get started without him. Okay, next up is the approval of the minutes. And this is the Planning Commission regular session meeting minutes of October 13th. Anybody have any issues that they saw on the video? Or?
I'll make a motion to approve the meeting minutes.
I will second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained?
Abstained.
Okay. One abstention. Wasn't here. Okay. Next is the citizens' public comment. There's a public comment form available immediately inside the council chambers. Anyone who would like to address the Planning Commission on any matter not on the agenda will be given the opportunity after submitting the form. Each speaker should limit their comments to 3 minutes. The normal disposition of these items will be at the next scheduled Planning Commission meeting. Okay, next is public hearings. And the first public hearing we have is a continuation of file number 1-TIA-25-A1 and A2, which is an appeal of the Windhaven Phase 3 traffic impact analysis. So what we're talking about is what the Planning Commission has taken a look at is really the traffic impact analysis. I'll turn it over at this point in time to Director Tokos.
Before I get started, if you could please go.
Okay. Disclosures. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
That we're here from the original.
Okay, this is a quasi-judicial hearing, and we're considering file number 1-TIA-25-A1 and A2, the appeal of the Windhaven Phase 3 analysis. And ultimately, this goes to the City Council, so we are... We'll debate and make a decision.
You will render a decision on the appeal, and it does not go to council unless there's further appeal on this one.
Okay, this statement applies to all hearings on the agenda. All testimony and evidence presented toward the request being heard must be directed toward the relevant criteria in the Newport Comprehensive Plan, Newport Municipal Code, or other land use regulations or standards which the speaker believes to apply to the decision. The failure of anyone to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the Planning Commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue will preclude appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals, which is known as LUBA, based on that issue. An issue which may be the basis for an appeal to LUBA shall be raised not later than the close of the record at or following this evidentiary hearing. Such issue shall be raised and accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the city decision makers and the parties an adequate opportunity to respond to each issue. The failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the city to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Prior to the conclusion of a hearing, any participant may request an opportunity to present additional evidence, arguments, or testimony regarding the application. If such a request is made, then the hearing will be continued to a date certain and a schedule set for submittal of additional testimony, a period for parties to respond to the new testimony, and a period whereby the applicant can provide final arguments. Are there anybody on Zoom? One?
Yes, there is. There's Todd Mobley.
Todd Mobley, okay. Need to read a Zoom script here. This meeting is being conducted by Zoom video conference. Before we get started, I'd like to provide staff a moment to identify individuals that have dialed in. Mr. Todd Mobley. I'll go over a few ground rules for using Zoom. Any individuals wishing to speak should use the raise hand feature, which can be found by clicking on the participants button on the bottom of a computer screen. The raise hand button on the bottom of a smartphone or by dialing *9 on a landline. I will call out the order of testimony in cases where multiple hands are raised. Please keep your microphone muted unless you are speaking. Press *6 to mute and unmute a landline. Persons may participate by video or phone, and we can make a shared screen feature available for those that wish to make a presentation. Information shared with the Commission in this manner is part of the record, and a copy of the materials will need to be provided to staff. At this time, I'd like to ask Commission members to disclose any actual or potential financial interest, bias, ex parte contacts, or site visits they may have related to this agenda item, which is the appeal.
Site visit.
Site visit also.
I'm revisited that intersection. Yeah.
Okay.
All same, I think.
Okay. I did not. Okay. If anyone present has an objection to the participation of any commissioner or the commission as a whole, please raise that objection is made.
I'm not understanding what you mean.
What?
I don't understand what you're saying to me.
Oh.
If I want to object to what's going to happen to the
person. No, well, you're objecting to an individual commissioner or the commission as a whole.
Thank you.
Okay. This is a quasi-judicial hearing for the purpose of hearing the file number, my thing went out. 1-TIA-25-A1 and A2, appeal of the Windhaven Phase 3 traffic impact analysis approval. The Planning Commission may, at the request of a participant or on its own accord, continue the hearing to a date certain to provide an opportunity for persons to present and rebut new evidence, arguments, or testimony related to the approval criteria. Few announcements to make before we start. The hearing will proceed in the following order: staff report, the applicant's testimony, persons in favor, persons opposed, the applicant's rebuttal. The record will then be closed for public testimony. The commission will then deliberate, voice any questions, and come up with a verbal decision. A final order and findings will be prepared for consideration at the next meeting. We've got other business to do tonight. Due to some time constraints, staff and the applicant will be allowed up to 15 minutes. The applicant will receive up to 5 minutes for final rebuttal, and anybody else wishing to testify will be given 3 minutes. Okay. So at this point, we turn it back over to Mr. Tokos.
Thank you. Derek Tokos, Community Development Department. At the last public hearing, I spent a fair amount of time going through the staff report and walking through all the relevant approval criteria. I will not be redundant and do that again, as that information is all in the record. I will summarize, though, just briefly. Again, we have a traffic impact analysis decision. Traffic impact analysis trigger in the city of Newport for a formal review of the traffic impacts on a project when a project in this case generates more than 50 or is likely to generate more than 50 p.m. peak hour trips or 500 daily trips. And that's based on Institute of Transportation Engineers formulas for calculating trips attributed to different types of projects. In this case, it's a 90-unit apartment project. And the purpose of the traffic impact analysis is to evaluate the transportation facilities to confirm that they are adequate to serve the proposed use and if there are any mitigation steps that are required. This decision by myself as community development directors that the transportation facilities are adequate, although there are some things that were part of the conditions of approval that they need to do, such as installation of sidewalk and some work on their accesses and things of that nature that would be in the normal course of doing a development. The scope of the evaluation for traffic impact analysis is determined with a meeting with the city engineer, which was performed before the application was submitted. It's part of a pre-application that was done where all of the relevant intersections and whatnot were identified for purposes of evaluation. And so, you know, with that, I think I'm gonna not do any other presentation or drill down on any of the criteria. I'm happy to do that if needed, and I understand that the applicant has their transportation engineer, Todd Mobley, here to answer any kind of detailed questions on the transportation hearing and the nature of the study that they performed. So that's all I have.
Okay. For the record, Mr. Commissioner Escobar has joined the meeting.
And I apologize for being delayed.
Mr. Berman, did you have
a... Yeah, I have a question for Derek. Can you describe maybe a little bit more exactly what was done to, if you will, refresh or confirm the original report in preparation for this phase?
You know, actually, I think I prefer, since Todd Mobley prepared that, for him to speak to that. What I will say is that the report that had been prepared accounted for all of the traffic attributed to the three Wind Haven phases and the background traffic on the facilities being evaluated. It had assumed that you know, this would, you know, be under construction this year, and it's not. It's probably going to be under construction another 12 to 24 months, and the applicant can speak exact timing on that. And so that's what I understood Todd Mobley did with his refresher, was just to back out that the actual construction may happen a little bit later than originally intended. It didn't change any of the results in the report. They still came in as the original report had recommended and found that the criteria had been met.
Okay.
Before we proceed, Bill Braulio, since he was late, I'll need to go through the disclosure real quick, like the rest of you.
I didn't quite hear that.
Ex parte contacts.
Did you have any ex parte contracts, financial?
No financial. Visits? I did drive the site since our last meeting.
Okay.
Both through 31st Street and 36th Street.
Okay. Thank you. Is that clear?
Yeah, that's covered that.
And, okay.
You know, at this point, I think that you've got the applicant that has an opportunity to provide any additional feedback. I would note we did not receive any additional testimony between the hearings, so I had nothing else. You didn't receive anything else on this because we didn't receive anything else in the record between, you know, the last public hearing and tonight.
Okay. We could have Mr. Capelli.
The applicant, the way the process works is the applicant gets to go first.
He's the applicant.
No. Todd Woodley goes first, then the appellants, and then Todd has that's the flow, and that's how the last hearing proceeded.
Oh, okay. You're saying the applicant is not Mr. Dwyer and Capelli, even though they submitted the
applicant. The applicant is the one seeking the approval of the TIA.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Todd Mobley, I think is.
Yeah.
Mr. Woodley?
My name's Todd Woodley. I'm representing Windhaven Ridge 3 and the entire Windhaven Ridge project, the applicant for the TIA. I, for sake of not repeating everything that was presented in our first 15 minutes, I don't think there, I'm looking for some direction here a little bit from city of do we have to restate the entire presentation or just?
No, this is just your opportunity. If there's any additional information you wish to share at this point, you can. I know Councilor Berman had a question relative to work Todd did, and Todd's available. If you could answer that question, that'd probably be appropriate this time.
Yeah, please.
Okay. Yes. So in the last hearing, I believe I was the last closing statement, and I had closed that part with some elements that we were looking at that could help the cause, and they were kind of outside, you know, in other words, things like construction-related impacts and discussions how we could mitigate those things. That was part of a closing statement for the prior hearing. So I guess picking up on that, I would just offer back up any questions you have of Mr. Mobley. Now would be the time to ask them, and other questions of us, but we don't have any more presentation.
Okay. Yeah. Todd, thank you for joining us. Could you talk a little bit about that reaffirmation of the original traffic impact analysis that you conducted, I assume this year sometime, correct?
Sure, you bet. Good evening. It's Todd Mobley with Lancaster Mobley. Yeah, we prepared a supplemental TIA on October 9th prior to the first appeal hearing. And Derek did a good job of kind of summarizing what that was and what the findings were. But essentially, we added some more growth. We moved our traffic volumes farther into the future by 2 years to represent a new build-out date. Like in the original study, that analysis included traffic from all three phases of Windhaven Ridge. And the analysis results were the same as the original traffic impact study. So there were no revised findings or recommendations at the end of the supplemental TIA. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. We did talk some about the roadway connections to the south and the bridge project that's now reopened, but otherwise, that's a quick summary for you.
Okay, thank you. And during the original and the supplemental, you really didn't do a deep dive into the intersection of 31st and 32nd, did you?
That's correct. It was not included as one of the study area intersections.
Thank you.
Braulio?
May I have a question of the applicant?
Yeah.
When you were here 2 weeks ago, you know, we saw the community of the people who live up in the Beach Club Estates. What struck me was that the conclusion of that particular hearing, you had testified earlier you hadn't reached out to them before the hearing. And then you indicated during the course of the hearing, or towards the conclusion of the hearing, that in looking at the stop sign where people are coming up from 31st Street to hit Highway 101, you said, well, you know, it's difficult to see. You've got the branches coming down, and you can see why some of the testimony was that people were shooting right through that stop sign. My own observation was that there was a change in the tenor of the dialogue between you and the residents, because there was some reaching out. There seemed to be a community effort going on there. And that's just my own observation. So as I've indicated, I drove the roads earlier this week. And it seems as though your phase three is primarily on the northern part of the parcel rather than the southern part of the parcel. And we had a discussion last time about the construction vehicles coming in off 36th Street. Now, obviously, if we look at 36th Street, it's well-maintained. If you look at 31st Street, it's twisty, roads falling in, it's subject to the slides. 2 years ago, there was a slide that was closed for a while. So it seemed to me, and I'm not a traffic engineer, but it just seemed to me that if you could take in your phase three and try and encourage the residents to use 36th Street rather than 31st Street, you would alleviate 90% of the concerns of the people who came and testified in opposition to your plan last week. So I'm looking at I don't mean to blindside you here, but there was a schematic. And if you're familiar with this, this was in part of the traffic safety plan. And if we look at, I'll be happy to share this with you, but we see a number three, which seems to be where construction vehicles would be going into the project. Then section number four, if I could approach.
Yeah, sure.
Then if we look at number four, it looks as though that would intersect with Harney, then head on down to 35th Street.
Yeah. Okay, yes.
I'm looking at figure two of the Lancaster Mobley traffic proposal.
Okay, correct.
Okay.
Correct. These are the two points of egress for the final phase. This point number three is on 36th itself. I think kind of just human nature, most people exiting that would go down to intersection one on 36th Street.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah. This one here,
number four
is the one on Harney Street. I had some things that that were related to those final comments that mm-hmm. are pertinent to bring up now. And the one thing I'll bring up is outside of what is in the traffic study, there's construction phase work that the city can impose conditions on us, or in this case, we can voluntarily arrive at conditions. And one of the things that works for everybody is we do not want any construction traffic on 31st Street. So, this is related to the construction phase. As a reminder, we as the applicant can't arbitrarily control the city streets for normal operation, but for construction operations, yes, we can. So a couple of the mitigation measures would be, first of all the construction operations, direct all traffic and have signage at all exits and entrances that would drive all the traffic from the site to the intersection of 36th and 101. So that would cover both intersections 3 and 4 during construction.
Now, after the project's completed,
yes,
would exit number 4 still empty out from your development onto Harney?
Yes, it will empty out of the development.
Would it be feasible to close off exit 4 and have all of the traffic exit through exit number 3, directing 90% of the traffic down 36th Street?
I don't. My answer is a non-answer because there's other things that we can't control, such as fire department multiple mm-hmm. access mm-hmm. points mm-hmm. that may likely negate the ability to even eliminate that exit. Now, another thing that I brought up here is we can do all the education and enforcement internally that we want. And so this intersection 5, right now we have the other phase right here off intersection right. 5. And I think in the case of, what we plan on doing immediately is with the existing residents, have an outreach to advise them that there's a better path through 36th Street to exit.
So your exit number 5, it's very well developed. The roads are nice.
Correct. So, and it was brought up before the last meeting, too, that there was concerns about people not stopping and possibly not seeing a stop sign. And so that was one of the reasons that we wanted to send a notice to all of our existing residents and advise them that remind them that there is traffic control. There's a stop sign there. There was a discussion that's outside our control, but we're more than happy to participate, and that is in city police patrols of traffic violators at that area. If and when that happens, we will absolutely notify every resident that we are aware that the Newport police are stepping up patrols, and we'd advise our residents to just do what they're supposed to do if they are the culprits, and please stop. Finally, pertinent to the question, Mr. Escobar, there are improvements or controls that the city can impose. Now, you know, we can say we will absolutely provide construction signage and direct our operations away from this. We can't address the city's issues in their streets with that certainty. We can say we are more than willing to participate. We will look at anything we can do with the city. But the first two items regarding construction and education of our current residents are absolutely things we can do. So that was just, I guess that's the long answer to what you brought up.
Would that be a city project to maybe put something on the roadway, stop sign coming? You know, I've seen some intersections where there's going to be a stop sign or some kind of traffic control signal. And before you get there, there's stuff on the road.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some suggestions that we're more than willing to participate in, but they're under the control of the city. You know, first thing is any sight lines that are obscured, that's not hard to clear up. One thing that I think, you know, we all see is when you approach that stop sign from the east, where the concerns are with people running that stop sign, you are coming up a slight grade as you level out at the stop sign. You know, a lot of those types of intersections where people might not be aware, there are advanced rumble strips that are put down. You know, measures like that, we are more than happy to participate with, facilitate, but those, again, are at the city's direction.
Right now, the leaves have fallen, but I could see, you know, during the spring and the summer months, that stop sign could be obscured as you're coming up 31st Street by the vegetation.
Well, and that's a prime candidate, by the way, for a solar-driven flashing, the stop signs with the lights around the perimeter that are driven by solar. It would make that more visible, too.
I think as Derek Tokus again, Community Development, as we discussed, those are issues that folks can bring to the attention of the City Council, or you can bring to the attention of the City Council, independent of the TIA. Or in concert with your action as a sidebar, but there are operational issues that would have to be evaluated by the city engineer as to whether or not they'd be prepared to make those changes or in what manner those changes would be deemed appropriate. But we deal with that stuff all the time. We just did a whole battery of that stuff on Ocean View.
Just to clarify, you've used the participate several times. Does that mean financial participation?
Well, clearly, for anything construction-related, signage, efforts to direct it, correspondence, outreach, yes, that's us wholly. Education and internal enforcement of our existing residents, us wholly. Physical improvements to the city's property, participation is the right word. It's not saying we will do it. It's not saying we even can do it. It's saying first of all, we do pay fees for traffic improvements to the city, and the city does, you know, they have a system of utilizing those fees that are not necessarily tied to our project per se. You know, I can't speak for those fees. That's the city's disposition, but you know, it's perfectly reasonable in situations like this for us to financially participate in a reasonable manner.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. We now have Mr. Mobley has a question. No?
He's the traffic engineer.
He's the traffic coach. Okay. We had Mr. Capelli. Asked to have a continuation because he was not able to be here at the last meeting. So we could have Mr. Capelli, for the record, state his name and his address.
Yes, my name is Michael Capelli. I live at 3429 North East 2 Street in the Pacific Home Beach Club community. Thank you for continuing this matter from the previous date. I was I have family in Italy, and I go there every year, and consequently, I wasn't able to be here last time. But before I get to anything, I have something really strange happen here. Last Thursday, I got, is it Mr. Tokos? Is that this guy here, Mr.
Yeah,
Tokos?
Yeah, it's me, yeah.
Yeah, I got an email from you saying that, and an invoice saying that I owe $5,000 with respect to the subject property, and that it must be immediately paid. And I got copies of the invoice, but that's not all. Today at 7:06 in the morning, I got another invoice for $4,800 relevant to this particular property. And at 2:25 this afternoon, I got an email from Mr. Brannigan, at least that's whose name was on it, that says I owe $6,903. And so it sort of baffles me as to why this happened, but one of the things that occurs to me is that it's probably because the developer hasn't paid its bill yet, and the bills are coming to me. And that indicates to me that we got some serious problems with the evaluation of this entire matter, to be sending to an appellant three bills, and they're not really nice, particularly nice language. It's pay the bill fully now. Here's the wire instructions. And if you like, I can give you them. Would you like to see them?
We had this similar thing come up with Toyota Newport. There are scammers out there that are scraping information off the city's websites and putting them into invoices. They're not coming from the city of Newport, and the wire instructions, it's all part of a scam. We had Toyota Newport had, what, two of them that they reported to us, and they're, you know, so.
They've been reported to the police?
Yes, this has been reported to the police with the Toyota Newport. I wasn't aware of this particular one, but, yeah, there's somebody out there that's trying to make money by pretending that they're the city of Newport, and they're sending people invoices, and the wire instructions is the way to get folks on the hooks. So.
Well, let me ask you, has the application fee been paid by the developer?
Of course, yes, traffic impact analysis, absolutely.
When was that?
That was at the time they filed the application, back in July. Further, it's not anywhere near that amount.
Yeah, well, the only reason I ask is that I haven't seen it in any of the documents that were attached to the record. So, hard for me to tell whether they paid or not. And frankly, whether this is a scam or not, mm-hmm. I don't know, but it's not my problem, it's yours. And so, you know, if you're sitting where I'm sitting, you get this kind of information, it's troublesome at the least, mm-hmm. and worrisome at best. Anyway, so let's get to the issue. What we're dealing with here is a report that's based on statistical generation analysis. It's essentially, excuse me, it's a statistical analysis not based on actual facts, but on predictions based on assumptions. If the assumptions are incorrect, then the prediction is going to be incorrect. If the analysis that was made here isn't consistent with what's actually happening on the ground, then the analysis is flawed. And what we know is that in 2023, in May, but before that, findings were made based on statistical analysis, 100%. The so-called update that was made by Mobley engineering firm doesn't change any of that, save to say that it contends that it included phases 1 and 2 in its update. I don't see the update anywhere. It's not attached to the documents that were indicated in the docket tonight. So I don't know where that's coming from. But what I do know is that if that review was made in October of this year, then there's no reason why in the world there was no consideration given to the traffic coming along 31st Street. Can't explain it. because the traffic along 31st Street is something that's observable today. It was observable in October. It's been observable since Phase 1 began and was construction and was leased out completely. It's been observable since Phase 2 was leased out completely. And it's been observable by everybody that lives in our community. And those 17 or 18 people that were here last week who told you that when they're standing on the corner by the development, the cars are stacking up. And just about every TIA regulation or ordinance that I've seen passed by other cities specifically says, you know what? If there's a queuing problem, you need to address it. Now, statistically, was there a queuing problem based on this analysis that was done in 2023? Maybe not. But it's kind of like saying, you know, this is the almanac, and there's not going to be any rain for the next 5 years, and I'm standing in the middle of a deluge. That's what it is on the ground in our community. And so the stop sign's an issue, yes. The queuing is an issue. Why? Because the distance between the intersection and where our people live and walk and drive out of is about 6 car lengths. Personally, I've been waiting to enter that intersection to turn towards Coast Highway when there's been cars stacked up beyond the stop sign. Now, I can wait. I don't have a problem with that, but firemen can't wait. EMTs can't wait. If the intersection entering or exiting or development is blocked, they can't get in. You can't ask cars to back up. You can't ask cars to go forward. There's no place to go forward because Coast Highway is packed.
I regret interrupting you, but I was supposed to use this box and trigger the 3 minute.
I don't get to. The 3 minute doesn't apply to me. I'm sorry, sir.
I think you've exceeded your 3 minutes. So
I don't. It's not a 3 minute.
The committee doesn't have a 3 minute limit.
This is exactly the point.
He's the opposition.
Okay. Yes, 15. All right. My apologies.
Okay. Accepted. So we have queuing problems, we have blocking problems, and the idea that we have to wait for the police department to come out and correct them, the idea that we should wait for the city council to come out and correct them, or any other municipal agency, when it's the department, responsibility to look at those things and to make sure that the report is consistent with what's actually happening now, not what may have happened based on 2023, or even I think I saw somewhere 2020 to 2028, there's not going to be any problems whatsoever. It just doesn't cut. You know, it just doesn't cut the mustard. And frankly, it's a perfect example of where actual facts and statistical facts fall in opposite directions. And you've been given notice, and the developer should be on notice, that in the last year and a half, the traffic coming from the east to the west on 31st Street has significantly increased. And if it's not, it seems to be, to me, to be illogical to say something along the lines of, that's not our problem. That's a problem for the police. That's a problem for the city. But the fundamental flaw with that is that the problem is occasioned by the developments, not by the city. You know, if you're an apartment owner and say, hey, you know, please go the other way around to get, so you make sure you don't go on 31st Street because it's too crowded. Or, you know, there's a stop sign there, so please stop. Okay, I'm a renter. Screw you. I'm not going to stop. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. The only place that something gets done is through you and through evaluating the report and comparing it to what's happening on the ground now. And if that means Mobley has to take some more time to do that, fine. Fine. We welcome that. We welcome some of the recommendations that were made by the previous witness. Yeah, speed bumps are great. Lights that flash, great. Fixing sight lines, great. But trapping people in their community, creating the possibility that EMTs and fire departments and other emergency vehicles can't get in. And on top of that, making it almost impossible for pedestrians to cross, not only from our development, but from coming down the street to cross 31st Street to go and gain access to the public access to the beach. We have tons of people who walk on the beach. Now they stand on the corner waiting to see if they can get by. This is not stuff that we're making up. This is stuff that's happened, is continuing to happen, and let me say one thing. I'm 100% behind the development. I don't care what happened 25 or 30 years ago. I don't care if people are complaining about this sort of stuff. That's water under the bridge. I've been an attorney for 40 years. I get it. Not objecting to any of that. What you do with 36th Street, I don't care either, because I don't go that way. What I do care about is that segment of the road that was never analyzed at the very beginning, Northwest Harney and Northwest 31st Street, before the intersection with Coast Highway. Can't do anything about Coast Highway, that's ODOT's problem. I get it. But when the report says there's going to be queuing, and it says in 2023, and apparently up now with whatever this supplemental report is, up to 2027 or 2028, and I don't know where in the world this data is coming from, because it's not coming from actual data. And you heard the witnesses, and they may not have all been articulate, but basically they say the same thing. And so I'm requesting that either the report be updated to reflect the actual road conditions at this time, or that the commission simply impose those mitigation efforts that are necessary to at least render the area safe. All I got.
Questions of Mr. Capelli from anybody?
I'd like to ask about the anticipated outcome. So, indicated you understand that the development itself isn't really before us. It's the transportation impact analysis.
Correct.
If a new analysis were done and it simply suggested many of the mitigations that were discussed previously between my colleague and the applicant, if those came to pass, would you remain opposed, or what outcome
no.
do you seek here?
No, and I think I mentioned this in the brief that I submitted. We're looking for an outcome that basically minimizes the increased threat or risk to members in the community, pedestrians, and vehicles. And that can be done, I think, relatively simply, not asking you to straighten the street, although that would be an ideal situation if you could. But we're asking to essentially warn folks that are coming up that are readily blowing the stop sign now, speed bumps, the solar panel things, an actual crosswalk so that people can get to the beach, and some mitigation of a blockage. Even if that's one car width between the stop sign and the intersection, something that at least endeavors to keep people from blocking vehicles going in and out of our development. And there's tons of people that go in and out of our development. I mean, I think UPS people, like, literally, they're there for 20 hours a day. Because, you know, a lot of us order crap on Amazon. And so we got lots of people coming in and out of that development. We have many handicapped people. We have, unfortunately, we have the EMTs and the fire department out way more than I would like, but they come out. And these are issues that are legitimate concerns. But to answer your question, I think most of that can be mitigated without, like, spending tons of money. It's just to me, it's like a common sense thing. And I think I think Mr. Escobar said he drove it. He even mentioned the stop sign and the berm and all that stuff. Those are the kinds of things that if you put people on notice about them, they will slow down. I know that when I drive along the coast, is that the Glen Haven area? I don't know where they have the solar signs and stuff and the bumps. I slow down. You know, I'm not going to go jumping over one of those bumps and mess up my car. And it reminds me that I need to slow down. And that's all we're looking for here, is that sort of practical remedy to what is otherwise, you know, a very problematic situation and a dangerous situation. And I don't think we need to have accidents, you know, in advance to ensure that that's, you know, that the present situation is not good. It's not appropriate when you have 15 or 20 people here last week or 2 weeks ago telling you what they experienced. So I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Capelli.
Okay.
And at this point, people who are
you have another appellant, Mr. Dwyer, who's here tonight too. So, okay.
Mr. Dwyer?
If anyone would like a copy of the invoice, two invoices I received.
$4,800. Could you sit down? And
test. Can you hear?
Well, now we can.
You want me to sit?
Yeah.
Yes.
We'd like you to sit.
Minutes. Yeah.
Oh, that's too low. Okay. I got an invoice. I got two invoices today. With the watermark, $4,800 they want. From Olivia. Is there an Olivia that works it? All right. If you want them forwarded to you to maybe track.
Yeah, if you share them, we'll share them with our police department. I mean, it's a scam, and that's what we're dealing with.
Okay. Name's George Dwyer, 3456 Northeast Douglas Street, Newport, Oregon. I back up to the property, Windhaven 100. That used to be a nice wooded area. It had wetlands in there, and there was all kinds of wildlife that we would see, and had crickets and frogs at night. It's absolutely silent now. All the animals are gone. We used to have deer become behind the house. We had cougars that visited the park every now and then, bobcats, and we had a bear. The bear now is at Windhaven 1, eating out of their dumpsters. He's been caught there. The cougar is dead. He ended up moving north into the Embarcadero area and got on the dock, and they tried to tranquilize him, and he jumped in the water and drowned.
Hey, Mr. Dwyer, could you speak to the matter? Right.
Yes, we can do that.
Nice, but speak to the matter, please.
Okay, so there was a lot of talk about the TIA. And it has a lot of information in it, and it's supplemented, even with the supplements that I've never seen. Nowhere does it state anything, including the supplements, about evidence of adding the 90 people into our confined area, whether it would be safe to do that. We all have to get out of that park if there's an emergency. And we're already over, there's 300 vehicles already in that park. Windhaven 1 and 2 added way too many people that are packed into that park now. We had to depend on the road conditions that are there right now. We would never get out of there and people would be dying. We need a non-biased party to do a traffic analysis that'll show how long it would take for everyone to get out of that park if we had to. Not only the park, the whole neighborhood. You've got Little Creek Apartments, you've got Windhaven 1 and 2 now, you've got a subdivision up on top of a hill. I don't know the name offhand, but there are too many people in that area that you would never get everyone out of there if there is an E3 emergency. If you look at the vestibule when you come in this room, there's a sign. It says that you can only put 150 people in this room. There's a reason for that. There's a fire in here. They have rules that you can't put too many people in here because they can't get out. Well, that's the same problem that we're facing by adding more people into Windhaven or Lot 100, Windhaven 3. All right, now I'll start reading. Okay, it's not, it might happen. It's with all certainty that a major earthquake will hit Newport, where the San Andreas Fault causes the Cascadia subduction zone fault. The activation is likely to activate, and the other one is likely to activate the other and synchronize, according to marine geologist Chris Goldfinger of Oregon State University. The fire chief of Newport states that wildfires have hit Oregon in the coast in the past and they will in the future. And all we can do is have a ready, set, go plan, but we need to be able to go. Earthquakes will cause fires and gas explosions. In 2023, Hawaii had 102 people die. Some of them in their cars trying to flee, but were trapped. And in 2018, the campfire in California killed 85 people. Some were found in their cars on steep terrain, and others were trapped in their vehicles elsewhere. In 2020, the Oregon Echo Mountain Fire was rapidly approaching Lincoln City. An E3 evacuation order was given to the Rhodes End community. As they tried to evacuate and approach the Logan Road in 101, signalized three lanes, left, right, straight. They couldn't get out. They were trapped for hours. If the fire didn't stop in Otis, people would have died there. Shortly after that fire, a developer wanted to put a housing project in there. The city council asked the question, well, how are you going to get all these people out of there? They're in a boxed-in community, and there's no way out but that one intersection. And we face the same thing. We have 36th and we have 31st. And neither one of those roads you can get out on 101 easily. And if there's a situation where everyone's panicking. I mean, I've lived in Florida and had to evacuate for a hurricane, and it's just bumper to bumper, creep and crawl, and nobody's going to let you in. So we will be dying if the fire comes. What I wanted to suggest, and if you're going to revise the and do a further study, is that they put something in there that will show how many people can get out. How many people can you pack in there safely? You can put 150 people in this room. How many people, how many vehicles can you put into that boxed-in area? We can't go west. We can't go east. All we can do is get out on 101 and hopefully be able to go north or south. There are well over 300 vehicles right now. To add 90 more is just compounding the problem that we have. So I'm saying this should not be going on. Let's figure out a way to get us out of there. If you can't do that, then I don't think we should be approving this project. I cut my statement short because I thought I only had 3 minutes. So that's pretty much what I wanted to say, though. Is there any questions? Yes.
One of your points in your original testimony,
yes,
stated the approval was based off prejudice and biased decisions.
Right.
I'd like to know exactly what evidence you have for that.
Well,
and ask whether you have submitted it to the Oregon Government Ethics Commission or the City Council.
You all know each other. You work on this council together. Derek and Todd have done a lot of work together. He's been on the committees with Derek.
Right. So is that guilt by association then, you're saying?
Just
because they
I'm
know
saying.
Each other?
Yeah.
Well, I think you owe Mr. Tokos and apology, and I also tend to disregard any of your testimony based on this kind of nonsense.
Oh, sure, sure. Disregard everything because of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you're willing to lie like that.
Lie? I'm not
claiming
lying.
Claiming there is a conflict of interest and prejudice and bias.
Not lying.
Well, I'm sorry. That's the way I'm going to treat your testimony.
If you were, you know, you have a relationship where you see somebody every day, you know that person, and you would more likely tend to side with them in a situation. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you anymore because Bill isn't going to let me, but that isn't the way I operate, and maybe you do, and that's a problem on your side.
Sure, let's put everybody's life in danger, okay? Good.
If you recall, during my discussion with the developer, I asked if he could have just one exit into the phase three, which would be on the north end, that would exit have the traffic directed on 36th Street. And he thought that there was merit in that, except for fire codes that required an ingress and egress from two locations. That's why there was an extra exit and entrance into phase three along Harney. Now, in your development, the only in and out is through 31st, which becomes 32nd Street. Have you considered approaching the Homeowners Association about cutting an exit out through 35th Street that would merge on into 36th Street along the north edge? That would be something proactive you could do within your development to enhance the safety of the residents.
Well, we have the opportunity right now to go to 36th Street if we want to exit. So eliminating somebody's house and that property becoming community property was brought up at one point, but that didn't go over. Nobody wants to give up their house and their property to put a pathway to 36. I mean, if we want, we can make a left turn at our park stop sign and then go over to 36th Street and go out that way. But you run into the same problem. Traffic backs up at the traffic light at the Walmart on 25th Street. When that baby goes green, you've got a mile or more of cars that are going to go tight in formation, and you can't get out. I mean, it takes you 5 minutes sometimes just to creep into the center lane and then stop and wait for the southbound traffic to get in a little spot to get in, because Lighthouse Drive has the same thing. All the people coming from the north back up at that light, and then when they let go, boom, there you go.
Thank
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dwyer. Okay, do we have any other persons who would like to speak in favor of the applicants and the appeals they made? Are there any people opposed to what the people have testified? Okay. Mr. Woodley, do you have any rebuttal you would like to make?
Thank you. Yes, first of all, I do understand the concerns raised by Mr. Capelli and Mr. Dwyer, and take those seriously. I would encourage any questions, though, regarding this. They really are for Mr. Mobley, because this is a traffic study for this project. And so I don't really have any new information to add based on the last two testimonies, but if there are any other technical questions related to the TIA that are unanswered or unresolved, that's the only other questions I'm here to answer.
Any further questions of Mr. Woodley?
Yeah, real quick, Mr. Mobley, was there any actual traffic counts taken on those various streets when the original report, or was it all based on density of population and numbers derived from formulas?
Yes, actual traffic counts were taken at all of the study area intersections. That raw traffic count data is available in the appendix of the original TIA.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, if there's no other questions.
Just briefly, before you, it looks like you're about to go into deliberations. I do have a few observations I'd like to share with you here real quick. Depending on how you want to approach this. First, I do want just to capture in the record that the property we're talking about here has existing development rights for apartment development. It's not lost on city staff, and I'm probably not you or even our council, that there are challenges in our community in dealing with wildfire risk and other disasters. We have limited means getting in and out of the community, and some parts of our community have fewer means than others. If somebody were asking for a new development right, this commission and council and the council would have more leeway to address that kind of thing. But that's not the case here. They have an existing development right. They've had it for decades. So I wanted to make sure to acknowledge on the record that that is a legitimate concern. We're not saying it's not, but there are limitations on what can be done in that arena here because this is an existing development right. Second, I wanted to speak here. If the Planning Commission is inclined to if the Planning Commission is concerned about the condition of the operation of 31st and 101, my advice would be to make that a second motion and recommendation that be conveyed to the council. And here's why. The level of service at 31st and 101 is E. That's not great. And 36th is D, which is a little bit better, but still not great. But it meets our minimum standard. And so, therefore, we're really not in a position to say it's not safe or adequate because it meets the minimum standard, which is E. But it does put you in a position to say, hey, look, we have now come up to our minimum standard at 31st and 101. And so it is probably prudent for the city to look to do what it can to make sure that it's operating as safely as possible, recognizing the congestion at that location. But that would not be an ask of the developer. That would be a separate motion and ask, you know, that the council have engineering staff, public works take a look. to see what they can do to improve the safety and, you know, at, and or the operational safety and congestion to the best they can at that location, given we're now up against kind of that minimum threshold that's documented in the traffic impact analysis. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Director. Okay, at this point, the record is closed for public testimony. And the commission will deliberate questions and come up with a verbal decision. So we'll start with Mr. Baer.
I've been here for both sessions. I've heard Derek talk. I've heard all the questions, and the criteria seem to be met to me. And just leave it at that. Thank you.
When last week, when this was first presented, you know, my instinct was in asking the question of the fellow who appeared on the Zoom. His testimony was, and he was the person responsible for the traffic analysis. He said they hadn't looked at 31st Street, and I thought that was kind of a shortcoming. When we listened to the testimony of the residents, they were concerned with 31st and 32nd, and they were concerned with safety issues. The other issue that was spoken of is they said when Windhaven Phase 1 came, there didn't seem to be any increased traffic there at 31st and 32nd Street. But when Windhaven 2 came along, there was a lot of increased traffic, and when you drive it, you can see why. You go on down the hill on 31st Street, and there's Windhaven 3, three-story massive structure, and you can see why those folks would want to just exit back to 101 going up 35th Street. 36th Street is a nice, well-developed street. 35th Street is, it's got lumps, it's got curves, it's as Mr. Tokoros would say, maybe it's met minimum standards. What did impress me was the developer wanted to reach out to the community and try and mitigate some of the potential effects that the residents of the beach club would have. In looking at the figure number 2 of the traffic control, I had suggested maybe closing off potential exit number 4, and he talked about traffic issues. Then we suggested that to the folks who were appealing. They didn't want to punch through on from 35th to 36th to give their residents a separate means out in the event of a disaster. If you drive down there, dirt's being turned. There are big trucks moving dirt and leveling it out. Construction's going. It's going to happen. On a personal level, I appreciate the comments about enhancing the safety of that stop sign where 31st and 32 come along, whether that requires a separate motion, as our director has noticed. There needs to be something, maybe some flashing lights or something on the ground to enhance the safety. First comment. Second comment would be, if we look at Phase 3, that's actually up towards the northern part. There's going to be much more of that traffic. I think it's going to ingress and egress out of 36th Street. It's not going to be like a Phase 2, which is down at the southern end. Given the efforts of the developer to work with the community, work with the residents, work with the city to try and enhance the safety of that intersection of 31st and 32nd Street, I'd be happy to make that second motion that our director has suggested. But given that, and given that the other criteria seem to have been met, I would suggest that this committee approve the applicant's request. That's it.
For Hanselman.
Yeah. Well, it does appear that the stop sign at 31st and 32nd. The housing development right there is the crux of a lot of this issue. But that's an issue separate from Windhaven Phase 3. traffic analysis did pass muster. If we're unhappy with those, then we have to get the criteria to change in those impact analysis. That's not our bailiwick. Getting a change for the stop sign, I think recommendations such as Mr. Tokos made and Commissioner Escobar has suggested he'll pursue getting the city to look at those intersections. I don't have the danger of coming out of a housing development and having someone run a stop sign, but I do have to leave my neighborhood and exit directly onto 101. So I am well aware of the difficulties getting onto 101. But I also was the guy that bought the house in the subdivision that has a hard time getting out on 101. So that was my decision. So
all the suffering you go through for that ocean view.
Well, well, I've learned to knit while waiting to get onto 101. So I don't know that I would support the appeal of the traffic impact analysis at this point.
Okay. Mr. Updike.
I agree with my colleagues. Traffic impact analysis appears to be done according to the standards that apply here. Appears ODOT confirmed that in their review. Question for Mr. Tokos. So can we add, though, a condition if we were to approve the TIA or uphold your ruling? Can we add a condition relative to the construction vehicle traffic, since that is under the developer's control?
Sure.
That would be relevant to 36.
No, that's fair. I mean, we would, the hook for us would be under a right-of-way permit, but I think that's a reasonable way to capture it.
Yeah. Okay. With the rest of it, the mitigation is in a second motion.
Right.
Okay. That's where I stand.
It would be the long way to get to the development if those trucks came on down through 35th Street with no guardrails. I mean, can you see one of them sliding over that hill?
Sure.
Excuse me for taking your time. Mr. Berman.
Mr. Berman.
Yeah, I too agree that the technical requirements of the TIA don't warrant our overturning of the director's approval, and that the vast majority of what we heard is more related to the intersection than the TIA, and something does need to be done. I would strongly support Mr. Escobar's letter or notice to the city council. I would also encourage anybody that's interested, should that come up on a city council agenda, to go and tell some of the stories that we heard 2 weeks ago. It's just horrible, and I would think that there are all kinds of traffic measures that could be implemented, even relatively inexpensively, like a box that says "Do not block intersection," and improvements of that stop sign, a good crosswalk, maybe with an island, maybe not. There's plenty of room at the entrance there, so all those things would have to be up to the city council, and the topic of emergency evacuation, as Derek said, is a problem citywide. And there are places that are even worse than Pacific Shores. Yeah. And it's something the council and we, when we have the opportunity, really need to look at. But that's going to be driven, I think, by the emergency planning and the fire department. To come up with some kind of way to fix this, because it's a major problem here and people are going to die. But that's disconnected from this particular issue.
So. Okay, and last but not least, I think the deliberations
from the other council members, I really kind of agree with. We're really here to give an approval of the traffic impact analysis. That's what we're really here for. As far as all the safety issues that everybody has raised, totally agree with you, with everybody. I live north of the city, but I drive by that very frequently, coming, going down to the stores. And I can understand. And I used to, don't do it anymore, but I used to play bridge up there every Tuesday for a number of years. And but that was before they built Windhaven 1 and 2 and, you know, so I can appreciate that. But as far as the what we were here for was the traffic impact approval, I would tend to agree. And I would recommend that my other commission members have a second vote, if you want to say, to suggest what Derek did as far as recommending to the city council that they take seriously the traffic problems there between Pacific Homes Beach Club and the 31st Street, which is, you know, pretty close to the 101. I mean, there's not a lot of room there. So that's kind of where I stand. So at this point in time, could somebody have a motion regarding
I move we deny the appeal of the director's approval of the traffic impact analysis for this file number.
I will second that motion on file number 1, TIA 25A1, and A2.
With a friendly amendment
to
add an additional condition to Mr. Tokos's approval that mandates the developer use 36 for construction vehicles.
Yes, absolutely.
And could we add the applicant's suggestion that he would reach out to his tenants to urge them to use 36th Street, like he did today at the beginning of his testimony? You're looking askance at me.
Well, that would be something under the developer's control, but I don't know if it's a condition that you can enforce.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not an enforceable condition, but I think it's.
Why don't we leave it as his good faith, and we'll see if he's going to walk the walk and talk the talk.
Could I suggest that we keep the first motion
clean,
and then we can have a subsequent motion to, you know.
Well, then the first motion has to be the extra
first motion
condition.
Would require just the one condition.
Yeah.
That I articulated.
Which is, repeat again.
That construction vehicles must be directed to use 36th, and not 31st.
Okay. So, could we...
That's a motion to add the condition?
Right. Is that acceptable to the maker and the second?
I don't know who made the first...
I did. Yes.
So, could you restate the motion, please?
Okay. The motion is to deny the appeal of the director's approval of the traffic impact analysis, but add the condition that all construction traffic will access the site by a 35th and not use 31st. 36th, not use 31st.
Okay. Is there a second on that motion?
I would second that motion.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, hearing none. Second motion that somebody can...
On the second motion, Director, could you maybe hit the high points so that I don't miss anything here? We want to make a recommendation to the City Council to enhance the safety of the intersection at 31st and 36th Street.
Yeah, you could frame it as such. You could say that you know that you move to have the minutes reflect and be forwarded to the city council, that the commission wishes that or desires that the council have staff take a look at and do what it can to improve the safety of the intersection of 31st and 101 and how that all works, with potential changes related to vegetation maintenance, advanced warning sign of the stop sign, crossing enhancements. That's what I had, speed bumps potentially.
I'd add in there that's a result of the anticipated increased traffic as a result of the Windhaven developments.
Correct. This is because, look, they meet minimum standard, but they're hitting that minimum standard at this point. So it's understood that there's more congestion there, and the commission believes it's appropriate for the city to take all reasonable steps to ensure that intersection's operating as safely as possible.
Anyone else have an additional message we want to try and send to the city council? I make the motion and incorporate Mr. Took, our director's comments there about forwarding a recommendation to the city to enhance the intersection at 31st and 32nd Street.
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion made, motion seconded. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none? Okay, we are finished with that one. Thank you for everybody who came to testify. We're done with that. We have another item to talk about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
This is file 1-AX-22/8-Z-22, the South Beach Island Annexation. Staff report.
Thank you, Derek Tokos, Community Development. Yes, before you, you have the annexation of about 144 acres of real property in South Beach that's currently surrounded by the Newport city limits. You had the legal descriptions and maps. I'll bring up a map here shortly here just so we can have it up there for visual purposes. It's 40-something tax lots, but then when you include personal property that's impacted, it's 50-something total. Newport City Council initiated the annexation at its August 18, 2025 meeting. This is a priority project, the South Beach Refinement Plan. So we did some public outreach back when we did that refinement plan. This was also a topic of discussion when we did some of the rezonings in South Beach. Island annexation, we call it island annexation when a city surrounds unincorporated pockets. And the island annexation statutes are under ORS 222.750. The city can annex those with or without owner consent. The process requires at least one hearing. In this case, there's two because we're applying zoning to the property, and that requires two. The statute also requires individual notice to each record owner, which we provided and included in your packet. What we did was we reached out to the county assessor's office, provided them the information in terms of the properties that were subject to the island annexation. They put together a list of the properties that are impacted and the anticipated tax impacts. We then plugged that in along with the zoning that was going to be applied to the property, and each property owner received an individualized letter saying what the tax implications are of the annexation, what the zoning is that would be applied to their property. And so all of those were included in the packet. We also provided formal notice, the more generalized notice that includes all of the requirements that we have to include in legal notices and copies of the maps and legal descriptions. One thing to keep in mind with respect to residential, there are a handful of residentially zoned and used properties within here. We have to do at least a 3-year deferral, and that's what we would include in the ordinance, and not more than 10. And that's what the statute says. So the effective date on the residential properties would be deferred 3 years, and that would be placed in the ordinance. And it's also important to keep in mind that this annexation will not compel people to connect if they have a perfectly functioning septic system. Okay, that will be in the council ordinance as well. However, one of the objectives of doing this is to encourage folks to connect to those services. They all exist down there. That we have existing sewer, we have existing water service. Now, new sewer connections cannot happen unless somebody's in the city limits. And as you know, we've had several of those properties down there have annexed over the last few years to get sewer service. That's why you have a few additional pieces that came in. But those services exist down there. With the annexation, there would also be a withdrawal from the properties would no longer be in the rural fire, county library, and we would be paying off their remaining Seal Rock Water District debt. And so we've accounted for that, and that would be bonded indebtedness that those properties were subject to before Seal Rock transferred jurisdiction for service to the city, which was done some time ago. There's one remaining bond out there that's still out there, and Seal Rock's tallying up what that number is. We'll have it for the council meeting. But we've accounted for that and budgeted for that. So that's the annexation side of it. You also have the zoning map amendments. So the way the zoning code works is, that's a pretty generalized standard you're looking at is, does it further the public necessity? Is it consistent with the general welfare of the community? And I'll go again back over. I'm going to go over the reasons why the council prioritized this and is taking this step and initiated this process. We also have the transportation planning rule, which says that, we have to think about any significant impacts on existing or planned transportation facilities. And I would note that there is one minor comprehensive plan amendment piece to this, which has to do with that portion of Mike Miller Park that is in the city limits right now, but under an industrial classification. And that's because it was a piece of land that has a big wetland on it that was transferred into Mike Miller Park from Landwaves, the developer who owned that property at the time. So Mike Miller Park up to this point has been under a county park designation, but also on its city industrial zoning. And we want to clean that up as part of this. I'm going to show that real quick. So I'm bringing up the map that shows the 144 some odd acres. So up the top here, here's 40th right here, going up to Wilder and the community college is where that cursor is moving. Okay, so the top of the pocket is up in here, and it goes all the way down to just below 50th, which is right here. And this goes, and then this guy here, where the cursor's moving around, that's Mike Miller Park. And then that piece that was put into the park is the purple piece there. So what we have is the zoning that would be applied to these properties. Most of the properties under an industrial comprehensive plan map designation, because this is in our urban growth boundary. The city had already planned for these lands to be in the city at some point. The industrial classification applies to most of it. The only pieces that aren't is what you see over here in yellow, which is just a little bit south of 40th. That would go on, that's a low density residential to go into an R2 zoning designation, which is consistent with the zoning in Wilder right next to it. And in fact, a couple of these properties are partially in the city and partially outside the city. It's kind of goofy, but it's what it is. They're mostly developed at this point with single family homes, on the lots, as you see, and I don't envision any major changes happening there, but they would have the ability to eventually connect to sewer. But again, this process is not being set up to compel people to connect. What we will do after this, and we'll be taking to the council, is putting in place a rebate program to encourage sewer connections. But those sewer connections can only occur after the property's annexed, and that's by state law. And so, but we're not here to say, hey, look, once you're annexed, you have to abandon a perfectly good septic system and connect within a specific amount of time.
So the connection's also subject to the 3-year rule?
For the residential it would be.
Right.
Because we're doing we have to do at least a 3-year deferred, that annexation will not be effective for 3 years for them.
Got it.
But, you know, the funds would be coming from South Beach Urban Renewal, but once they're committed, they're committed. So once we do it'll be an intergovernmental agreement between the Urban Renewal Agency and the city to do this rebate program, and then it's just going to be the funds will exist there until they're utilized. We're not under a time limit.
You were right on my next question of how we would commit the funds, so thanks.
So everything around up here would go under, the pink or light red, whatever. However your eyes kind of dial that one in, that's light industrial. and this is also light industrial. The only heavy industrial would be where the concrete batch plant is, and that's consistent with the existing use of the property. Because these lands are under an industrial comp plan designation, they could go I-1, I-2, or I-3. But I-1 seemed to make the most sense. It's the most flexible zoning for most of the property, but I-3 made sense for the heavy industrial because that's what's occurring there. And then you've got Mike Miller Park, which would be a public park zoning, would be applied to that. And then we would change that purple one down there on the bottom would be changed from industrial to public so that we could put P2 public park on it. Does that make sense? So again, I'm going to step back. So there are a number of reasons why the city council has initiated this. Make it easier to provide infrastructure to urban properties. As you know, having been doing this work for a while, when you have pockets like this, it makes it difficult for us to route urban services. They have to get routed around in many cases. You also have a desire to normalize the boundaries for emergency service providers. This is an area that's somewhat convoluted and confusing at times for them. Who's responsible for responding? City of Newport, Lincoln County, so on and so forth. We also have an identified need for additional industrial land, in particular lands that can be developed with flex industrial or small industrial spaces where small businesses, paint shops, contractors can lease that space and operate. We have very little of that. But that requires sewer service. You can't really get by with just a septic system or holding tank or something like that. So we're looking for land that can begin to develop more at scale with that type of use or other forms of light industrial uses. And then again, you know, we're looking to increase the utilization of that sewer service that was extended, I want to say, around 2010-ish. All the way down to 50th, so we've got the sewer service in place to serve all these properties. And any of them, once they're in the city, can connect. And if we could get that rebate program rolling out after the first of the year, which is what our intent is, it will have an incentive for people to connect. I did want to acknowledge that we did receive one public comment, which I believe was routed to you.
Yes, it was.
In advance of the meeting, and apologize for a second. I've got a lot of paper over here. I just had to find it. And this was a letter that was submitted to myself and will be forwarded to the city council. It was directed to the council as well from the owner of Newport Marine and RV Storage, outlining their strong opposition to the annexation. Their concern about the increase on their taxes, that they can't effectively remonstrate against this or stop it. It doesn't require their consent, I guess. Their concern about economic harm to small businesses and false promise of future services. So those were the key points that I saw there. And I just want to acknowledge those comments for the record.
Yeah, thank you.
The last thing I did on the transportation planning rule, I mentioned that we have to consider significant impacts on existing and/or planned transportation facilities. I included in here, as long as we're zoning it consistent with the comp plan designation, the administration rule says we're fine because we've already accounted for those impacts as part of our transportation planning because we consider these as being properties as being in the city at some point when we do that transportation planning. And so we're in good shape here. The only place where we're deviating is a public park parcel that is almost entirely encumbered by a large wetland. So I don't see any traffic impacts really attributed to that. So that's how I framed the staff analysis. So for you, it's a public hearing tonight, take public testimony, and it's a recommendation to the city council on the annexation and the zoning that would be applied to the property.
Okay. We don't really specifically have the applicant as the city. Persons opposed may come up, and we're limiting you to 3 minutes.
Rolio.
Pardon? Oh, the 3 minute mark.
My name is Carol Kutz, K-U-T-Z. My address is 4423 South Coast Highway. I'm the property owner of one of these properties that is designated here in that yellow area on the right of the diagram. It consists of six properties. There's one house on each property, and the property sizes are 1 acre to a little over 2 acres. It is extremely rural. It may be an island, but it is rural property. I would encourage all of you to go do a site visit to see what it looks like. It's the only thing in the application here today that is a residentially zoned property. Everything else looks to be industrial. I am objecting because I don't think that this proposal is going to benefit me as a property owner at all. There's nothing that the city is going to be able to do for me to make this to my benefit. You are going to raise my property taxes by approximately $150 a month, just under $1,800 a year, which is a lot. These houses aren't going anywhere. Two of us completed our homes in 2019 and one, I believe, about 2017. So there are some three relatively new homes of the six. So it's not like anything else is going to be built there or anything's going to change. The issue of the sewer is huge. If you were to do a site visit, you would realize what this looks like. The two lots, which one is mine, on the right side of the diagram are accessed via a culvert. That culvert failed a couple of years ago. We professionally hired people several times to repair it. It continued to fail, and we had to redo the whole thing. The other property owner and myself incurred costs of over $63,000 to replace that culvert. If you're to start digging in it to put in a sewer system, it's going to fail again, and the burden's going to be on us to fix it. The city's not going to step in and help us. There's a road that accesses all of these properties. It's a little one-lane dirt gravel road. It's our access road, and we maintain that road. We do the gravel. We have it, one of our neighbors generously has a tractor and grades it every once in a while for us. The city's not going to help us maintain that road. We're not going to get anything out of this, and it's just going to cost us more money. And so we're asking you to deny that parcel, which is definitely residential. I understand it's an island, but if you look at it, you'll see that it is an island. It's very rural. It doesn't look anything like city. There's never going to be any other services out there. It is what it is. And I'm asking you to deny that part of the petition. Thank you.
No, wait, can you come back for a second?
Yes, of course.
You said that was six lots?
It's six lots.
And there are three houses now?
No, there's one house on each lot, but three of them are almost brand new.
Oh, so okay. There are six houses in there.
Each one has a house. That's it. And nothing's going to change them. Still going to be those six houses.
Okay. Thank you.
If you bring up the map.
What map?
The annexation map. Okay. Thank you.
Hello. My name's Kathy Peterson. I'm 67 years old, and I've lived on that property for 61 years. It's beautiful. It's covered with big trees. There's no reason for any of that to be changed. We're all retired on limited income. Don't know what else to say.
Tell me what property that is again?
Pardon me?
What property we're talking about?
On the yellow piece. I'm one of the owners up there.
Ah, one of the six owners.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Sister? I talk?
My name's Debbie Guile. We moved to from Newport in 1963 there, and it was just barren. We had a new house built, and my grandfather and dad built all the trees there, planted them. So I got a forest up there around our my 2 acres. And since all the college and the new buildings that are being put in, we get a lot of wildlife in there. And it's just, I guess, I can't handle everything, but I'm just worried about it turning into a city, like a new road going in. Although there's nowhere to go, it just kind of ends because we're bumped right up to the college. And we're all, like she said, retired, limited income, our taxes are going up a lot. And I wish I could say more. I'm just kind of emotional about it. A little stress. But I know it's hard to stop change, too. So I guess that's all I have to say.
Hey, Thank you. Anybody else would like to come up? Anybody else? Okay, does the city have a rebuttal they would like to
make? I wouldn't say it's a rebuttal per se. I totally understand. There's a reason why for residential property, the statute includes a deferral for 3 to 10 years. I think you've got the play there if you want to adjust it. We were just putting 3 years in as a placeholder. But I would also keep in mind that, you know, one of the reasons, you know, that you look at annexing island properties is because they are surrounded by the city limits, and they do receive, I mean, they're proximate, they're basically, you know, in some cases closer than other properties to the city, and to, you know, and city services, library services, all, you know, recreation facilities, all of that stuff are the same services anybody who's in the city right now that enjoys. But, you know, the legislature with the island annexation recognized that on residential property in particular, and I think fixed income folks, you know, lobbied the legislature to put in that kind of 3 to 10 year window. So if you feel for this area, 10 years makes more sense. That certainly can be incorporated into the recommendation of the council. That's kind of where I'm at. Sewer service is proximate. It's right here at this point. I don't know if you can see the cursor. So, but again, we're not, you know, this is something where we're going to, you know, once inside the city, somebody can connect. So if somebody has a failed septic system, they can connect because they're in the city limits at that point. If they're in this city and we still have the rebate program, I can't promise a rebate program would last 10 years. But if we, you know, if we had a rebate program in the city, then they could take advantage of it. Certainly R2 zoning allows a little bit more flexibility than rural zoning. So you could see additional accessory dwelling units, things of that nature that could pop up. But probably, you know, it's R2 zoning, so you're not going to see massive amount of density over there. And as they said, a lot of these properties won't change at all for the foreseeable future based on how they're currently developed.
And what would be the implication should we recommend withdrawing that parcel
from the annexation. I know we'd be left with another island.
You're left with another island.
What is the practical implication?
The practical implication is that, you know, if there's a fire there, Newport is, you know, I mean, you've got, you don't have, police is probably the best example. So, you know, that's going to have to be the county sheriff that goes there in that pocket, not a police department, even though everything around it would be our police department showing up. I mean, that's the kind of thing you get with islands. It makes it more complicated if we were to try to push services through there. I mean, that's why the city was pursuing, in part, to bringing in these pockets, because to normalize the city's boundaries relative to emergency services so there's not confusion as to who's supposed to respond.
Is there water service there from the city? Or
yes, water city. City provides extraterritorial water service to this area. That we can do. So almost all these properties are, because wells generally don't work.
Do you have Newport water right now?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the people who, water service under state law can be provided outside the city limits. Sewer service cannot. Yes, we provide water service.
I'm worried about the failed septics.
Mm-hmm.
And the infiltration that it might have with any well water or anything like that. But if there's no well water, all city.
I'm not aware of any wells in this area. I mean, they're few and far between because you can't get quality water. Most of the properties have water service from the city.
Derek, could you restate the driving force as to why the city wants to annex this acreage?
There were a number of them. There were the four that I touched on. One is to make it, you know, easier for the cities to extend urban services, because we can do that a whole lot easier when the properties are in the city versus unincorporated Lincoln County. That introduces a different jurisdiction. To normalize the boundaries for emergency service provision so that our emergency service providers are not confused as to who's supposed to respond where. To add additional developable land, principally industrial land. That really gets at the I-1 stuff, because we are tight on inventory on that front. Those are the biggies. And, you know, to get better utilization of our sewer service, which we spent a lot of money on to get extended down to 50th, and have had very limited, number of properties that have tapped into that sewer service. So those were the reasons.
How do you respond to those citizens who say, this is not a benefit economically to me?
Well, I think I touched on that. I think, you know, what you can do is defer it for a number of years. You could, anywhere between 3 and 10 is what the island annexation statute provides for, mm-hmm. which does address that in many ways, because that's a pretty long time, particularly if you go the 10-year route, which means, I think the way the legislator set it up was that provides folks who are on a fixed income quite a glide path to account for that. Or you can recommend leaving a pocket. That would be the only pocket we would have in South Beach. And I'm not even sure we have one on the north side at this point. So that'd be
you mean
be
like
kind
the
of
six
isolated homes
that these ladies were talking about?
But, yeah, I mean,
that sort of pocket?
Yeah, it'd be unincorporated, which means, as I said, it kind of chips away at one of the objectives, which is to normalize the boundaries for emergency service, you know, purposes. So, you know, I think you can handle it a couple of different ways. I mean, you can go with somewhere between 3 and 10 years, which is what the island annexation is, and pass that on to four if you feel that, hey, it's fine for us to have a pocket in that location alone and pull everything else in. Yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of leeway here in terms of your recommendation to council.
Could it be 3 or 10 years or unless the property is sold during the interim?
Oh. I'd play with 3 to 10, and I'd have to look into the property sale component of it. It's an excellent question. I just don't recall off the top of my head.
So that right would go with the property as opposed to the owner of the property?
Well, the
glide path of 3 to 10.
Yeah, the ordinance would establish the timing, and it's in the And I'm not sure I have a printed copy of the statute.
I mean, it's by legal description, so it's got to be
yeah.
the deed, not the owner.
Your paperwork specified that if we sold, all bets are off.
It may. I didn't have that one handy just right now. So that's quite possible. The way the statute's set up is it if somebody were to acquire the property, then the annexation would trigger at that point. But it's not jumping out at me. I apologize.
And Derek, we see all these individual letters that went to all the property owners.
Yeah.
And they all have a calculation in them. They're very personalized, which I think is nice. Do you have any feel for the overall total net increase in taxes per year?
For all 144?
Add up all these.
I know what it is. It's a little over $84,000 across all 144 acres.
Right. All right. $84,000 a year.
$84,000 in additional annual taxes.
And what was the proposed budget for incentives to hook up to sewer?
We have $500,000 total for the project. The just getting all of the survey work and stuff like that, to get us to this point with legal descriptions and whatnot, we're into that about 20. The wild card is paying off their bond debt, because we'd be paying off all 144 acre properties remaining bond debt with Seal Rock.
And
I don't know what that number is off the top of my head, Bob.
Okay.
So I'm guessing we're going to have somewhere between 350 to 400 at the low end, maybe a little more depending on how Seal Rock's numbers come out, and they're working on
300,000
for the rebate program. Now the way we're envisioning the rebate.
No, how much to pay off Seal Rock? You don't know,
but no.
You can't even guess at this point.
No, yeah, I don't want to try to guess it
okay.
at this point
right.
with Seal Rock.
So that's $300,000 or $400,000
for a rebate program
that the city would spend, essentially,
or reserve for a rebate program where
right.
we would, you know,
but if everybody took advantage of it,
it would draw it down and eventually exhaust it.
Yeah. Okay. And then $84,000 a year against that, so the city's going to end up essentially losing money on this deal, if you will, for the first few years. Assuming everybody takes the rebate.
Well, remember, it gets a little more complicated than that. Remember, the rebate is coming from the last of the South Beach urban renewal dollars. And
well,
that's about...
big picture dollars. It's,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, so those are about 40% city money and 60% from the other taxing entities.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to look at it roughly. But
okay.
Again, you know, that's...
Yeah. I'm just trying to get a feel for the relative costs to the city and the homeowners, and it's tough. Now, was there only one objection from anybody who has industrial property?
That's the only one I had. I had a conversation with, I'll just share with you, I had a conversation with Raleigh's, and so they understand kind of where it's going. They're actually in the middle of purchasing a property and expanding into it with the county right now, but that'll all be concluded before this would go into effect, could even go into effect. And so they're fine. They seem to be fine, at least. I have an email confirmation from him because the county wanted to make sure that they weren't going to be taking an action contrary to what the city was trying to achieve. I had a conversation with another of the owners of the residential who just wanted to – they own one of the properties that kind of is already half. They have half the properties already in the city, half's not. And so we chatted. I think their principal concern was, are you going to compel us to connect to sewer? And I told them, no, that's not how this is being set up. If you have a perfectly good septic system, you're not going to be forced to. And the deferral thing came up too in that conversation. And then I talked to another lady who owns an industrial site where they have some manufactured homes on that site, and that was one where we ended up having to do some follow-up notices because all the notices went to her, not those that owned the manufactured homes, and that was really the tenor of that discussion. So,
and to your knowledge, do any of these properties, the residential properties have, or maybe somebody in the audience, have sewer problems or septic problems now? They're all working fine and...
Three of the homes are less than 10 years old.
I'm sorry?
Three of the homes are less than 10 years old, three of the six homes.
Okay.
And we have a, we're obligated to have a contract with a service company that comes out twice a year. And it's a, when we have to get a permit every year. So three of us are covered by that.
Okay. How old are the other three houses? That's on its original septic system.
We have a lot of sand around here. Yeah.
63.
Were they always on?
Hey.
Were they always on city water?
Or? No.
When? Yeah, when did you hook into city water? And where did you get your water before that?
I did have a chance to take a look at the statute. And so the statute does say that notwithstanding any deferral, property subject to a delayed annexation becomes part of the city immediately upon transfer of ownership. So that's how the statute's drafted. So that's how that would work.
So that's any transfer of ownership.
I read it to you just as okay. Upon transfer. I mean, upon transfer of ownership.
Typical.
That's what its statute says.
Typical vague legislation.
Okay. We've been working on statutes on this one. That's what we got.
Okay. At this point, the record is closed for public testimony, and we can start the deliberations. Mr. Updike, we'll start at that end.
Well, I'm certainly sensitive to the issue of the residential owners and their plight. The pro is the delivery of services probably more efficiently, particularly public safety services. So you've got to look at that as a pro. That's kind of an intangible, hard to value that, but that does have some worth against a tax burden. That's difficult. Totally understand that. With regard to the rest of the annexation, I have no problems with it. It seems fine. But I'm still pondering whether just an extension or create a smaller island is our recommendation. I'm not sure I know where I fall on that right now. I do invite my colleagues conversation.
Well, I would have a question for Derek. I mean, we've got this, I'll just say it that way, have got this $500,000 or some of it's already spent, I understand, but a significant chunk of money. Is there any way that could be designated in addition to rebates for helping to hook up to sewer, could it be also put in as a partial property tax deferral representing the difference, the increase in taxes, maybe tapering off over 10 years, but a property tax deferral for that portion, that amount that is increased by annexing in the city?
Yeah, no, I hear where you're coming from. I appreciate the question. I think it's a fair one. No, because the fund, the framework for this program was spelled out fairly in pretty clear detail in the urban renewal plan, and that would be kind of going outside the bounds of what those funds could be used for. And it does create an equity issue. They're not the only ones. That's 84,000. So they're not the only ones that will have tax implications.
Right. Right.
So now we're going to be doing that for every industrial property too. And part of this is the reason is they're benefiting from cities. There's a reason for those taxes. They're not there hypothetically. They're there to support city services to property. And so I think you get into a morass there when you start going down that slope.
Because we have done other property tax deferrals and waivers
for specific development
purposes
under
specific
programs.
Yeah. I know. So the concept.
It's a fair question. I hear you.
Okay.
Oh, am I supposed to be talking now?
I don't know.
Where do you
stand?
I don't know where I stand. I agree with John. I have no idea. It's just a real dilemma.
You can punt somewhat to the, you could recommend it forward and advise the council that they either provide an extended deferral period or pull it out when they make their decision. They have that same option.
Yeah.
It's not hard for us. I mean, we've got the legal description. I mean, it's not going to require another $10,000 surveying work. I mean, it's a distinct pocket that can be pulled out.
Right.
If you guys, I'm just saying, if that's the easiest way to get you guys to a point where you feel comfortable,
for something. Yeah.
then it's up to the city council to decide, you know, which way they want to go with it, which ultimately they would have to make that decision anyway.
Can I ask is there anybody among you that, and you don't represent all the property owners, but a majority it looks like, is there anybody of either the other two or any of you that feel there could be some real tangible benefit to being annexed into the city based on the kinds of things Derek was talking about?
We have all discussed it. There are just six of us, so we've all discussed it.
And the other homeowner is my son.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, he's going to do what you tell him.
Okay.
Thank you. I would, in my deliberations, think that I would like to, when the motion is made, see some wording that might exclude residential properties from the island annexation.
So your suggestion would be to exclude the yellow six lots?
Yeah. And make that a new island.
Create a smaller island.
City Council in 10 years can take a look at and try again.
They can take care of the culture.
Mr. Hanselman. No,
excuse me.
Let's move along. Mr. Hanselman.
Well, yeah, it is a bit of a sticky wicket here, but are they going to, when the city police show up and they've become an island, are they going to say, oh, I'm sorry, you can't come on and help me? Because they wouldn't be. Well, but that's what we're really talking about, is services, whether they be law enforcement or fire or whatever. the annexation process is trying to get rid of islands, not create them. And I think it's clear that when you annex, it's really hard to make things seem fair to everyone. It's just that seems to be the edge here. And for these six properties, it would seem like, oh, we're not getting any benefit. I don't know if that's true or not. When your septic system fails and you've got to pour in thousands of dollars with an above ground septic system, then maybe the city sewer would have been a better deal. And they can't tell that either, even though they've had no trouble. They can't see the future any better than I can. So I don't know what to do with these folks.
Okay.
You know, and a request. I don't. I truly, I'm flummoxed at what do we do to try to treat everyone equally, fairly, that kind of thing, make it a better area for servicing. I don't know. I just don't know.
Okay, Braulio.
Mr. Hanselman, that's consistent with your theme over the years of you've been really advocating for safety, regardless of what the issue was.
Oh, sure.
That's been a prime concern of yours.
For me,
So my question with Derek is, what do these folks have to do to participate in the glide path?
I mean, the glide path would be the one where it's somewhere between 3 and 10 years, which means the change does not impact them for whatever that year is, you know, so 3, up to 10. So if it's, you know, that means they continue to pay their taxes as they are unincorporated. They're not in the city, but they would eventually become in the city if over a 10-year period.
Proactive from the citizen.
Hmm?
Does that require some proactive movement on the citizens?
No, it'd be a function of, that's an excellent question. That'd be a function of the annexation ordinance. And it talks about, we'd have to provide notification to, you know, city recorder would have to provide it, the county clerk would get it, and that would go into the records. So they would basically put a clock.
So their financial concerns would be ameliorated with the glide path.
On the near term, yeah. But I mean, you know, whatever, yeah, say it's 10 years, that's a pretty big window.
Mm-hmm.
We typically, you know, 3 years, not as much. But those are glide paths. Those at least they're known to the owners that eventually the property would be brought into the city, but they have more time to prepare. And that's why I believe the legislature put the 3 to 10 years in there for residential.
And over that period of time, some of these improvements that are in the future could come to fruition.
That area will continue to urbanize. Exactly. That is fair to say.
Okay. Thank you.
The broader area, the pocket, the larger pocket.
Hey, Braulio.
I'm done.
Okay. Mr. Baer.
When I used to teach at the university level, I taught public administration, and I used to tell everybody, because they were trying to be like Derek or maybe a city manager, three things happen. When you pick up the phone and you dial 911, you want the police and the fire to be there. When you turn on your spigot for your water, you want clean water. Looks like you have that taken care of with the city water. The other is when you flush the toilet, you want it to go down. You don't want any problems. And I, unfortunately, I've seen this happen as a city manager where people want to, they have septic systems. They have all types of problems with their septic systems. And they come to the city wanting to hook up to the sewer after the fact, after there's been all the work done to establish the sewer system. Just for those reasons alone, you have to, thinking with my heart, it's with you. Thinking with my mind, it's with what I just mentioned. It's a real quagmire. But at some point or time, it's going to have to come to a head. And that's all I need to say.
Okay.
I know you guys are in deliberations. I'll take this quickly because I know we're getting kind of late tonight. But typically, if sewer is proximate to it, I mean, it varies depending on how close the sewer is. But if sewer is proximate, it's typically the more cost-effective route than replacing an entire septic system. That gets pretty expensive. And if we have the rebate program, that's going to only help. You know, but again, you know, I can't promise a rebate program is going to last for 10 years. It may last for 3 or 4 years, you know, but I don't know that it would last that long.
Any idea of what percentage of the cost of installing, hooking up to sewer would be covered by the rebate program? On an average for a residential
program. You know, what we're looking at right now, 75% up to a maximum of $15,000. You know, so it'd be significant. But, you know, part of this has to do with, you know, is not all of the properties are – every property is different. You know that with septic or with any kind of utility extension. You know, some are going to be easier to connect than others, and some are going to be cheaper to connect than others.
I am over a quarter mile from this proximate availability that you indicate. I mean, sewer availability. I'm at the very end.
So that's the extension, a quarter mile?
Like I said, it's going to be it costs. It's a different cost for different properties.
Quarter mile of sewer line is going to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, we haven't heard from you.
Well, I can't get a word in.
I really understand the desire for the city to annex those properties. It gets very complicated. I think Derek is correct. I mean, if you dial 911, Newport City Police, even if they're in the area, will not come to your aid. I do a lot of work for the Sheriff's Department, and we've kind of gone through this before. So 911 will say, oh, I'm sorry. We'll dial the sheriff deputy, and he can come on out and handle it. Unfortunately, the Lincoln County sheriffs they don't have near the number of deputies that they should have. City of Newport's got twice as many police officers as the sheriff department has. That's a function of the county not willing to allow the sheriff to expand their workforce, which has been that way for, about 4 years I've been on the council for the sheriff. And those deputies really get stressed, and it's resulted in just high turnover. And unfortunately, when you get an applicant, it takes them a year and a half before they can become a deputy or they can become a police officer. So, that's one of the things that's would happen in the case of an emergency down there. However, I understand mainly the cost of the tax increase, which is really kind of the issue together, because if we annex you, you don't have to connect to the sewer. You can continue to use what you have. And if it fails, that's your issue. So the real issue is the tax burden. And what are you getting out of the tax burden? Is it make it worth your while or not? And what I'm hearing from everybody is, no, we don't think we'll get enough. So my recommendation would be that we go ahead and complete the annexation and put those six properties, if you want to say, on the glide path. And my recommendation would be a 5-year glide path. Kind of gives you enough time to kind of move and
save money or move.
No, I mean,
if
somebody sells their property, you're annexed. It doesn't matter. Or if you transfer the property to your son or your grandson, just the same thing happens. If you annexation, that's it.
Is that a form of a motion?
Yeah, my motion would be that we continue the annexation and carve out those six properties for 5 years and put them kind of on a glide path to kind of figure out what to do.
I think if you're going to do 5 years, you might as well do 10.
Okay. Well, then make a motion. I didn't really make a motion. I just said
substitute motion?
Yeah, substitute motion. I move that we approve the island annexation as proposed with the provision that residential properties can defer for up to 10 years the annexation.
Second.
Yes. So, okay, we have a motion for annexation and a 10-year glide path. All in favor can signify by saying aye.
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 We got four ayes.
Aye.
Five ayes.
I can support that.
Or three quarters.
There's no perfect solution.
Could you do the vote one more time? I got a little. We just need to capture.
I think we were unanimous.
I don't agree with the 10 years, but that's beside the point.
Are you voting yay or nay?
I would vote nay.
5-1.
Five to one.
Okay. For a 10-year. Okay. All right.
And so that's a recommendation to the city council, and just for the audience, when would that come before the council?
Everybody will get notice of the city council hearing.
And thank you for
strongly encourage you to all find the other two people, get your kids to attend.
Compelling.
Go there and talk to them.
Always come and talk.
But it will be brought forward with your recommendation, and a 10-year glide path is what's going to be in the documents presented to the council.
Now, that's only for
The residential.
For the residential. For the other 6 or 3 years.
That's not even an option for non-residential in the statute.
Oh, okay.
Statute specific to residential.
Right.
All right.
Strictly residential.
Thank you for coming out.
Thank you for coming.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're part of this.
We got one last item here. The director comments.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention a few things.
Okay.
You guys all know Gary, he's resigned, so we'll reach out to the city administration to get the recruitment process going for that. As you know, our department is not directly involved in the interviewing of planning commissioners.
Right.
So that'll be handled by the city council and their process. We'll see where we land. Although I need to remind myself what everybody does, because we can't have more than two people in the same.
Right.
Line of work or prior to retirement line of work. So, John, I have you as planning. I'm doing my best to see what happens.
Doing fine so far.
Planning, I have you in the planning arena. I'm going to skip Bob. He was the toughest one for me. Jim is teacher. Bill, I had his business management, right?
Banking. But it was business management.
All right, so I got that one. Braulio, attorney.
Retired.
Retired, but still, I have to go with the... And then, Robert, I have you as affordable housing.
I'm no longer... I've left that.
Oh, did you? What are you? What is your back?
No, I actually started...
four times so far.
I started a new business with a colleague that's going to be doing writing services, like...
Grants,
resolutions, bylaws, articles of incorporation.
Okay. And Bob was a birder.
I skipped Bob. I couldn't remember what your
he was professional
background was. I came from a computer background and also worked a lot of years in a nonprofit.
Awesome. We're good then. I don't have to sweat it. Everybody's different.
Yeah.
So we don't have to worry about it.
Take anybody that's breathing.
It was, but that wasn't a profession.
Oh.
I thought you were going to do a big year.
What's the schedule for the rest of the year?
I need to get something out here pretty soon, because the last couple, these were been so much involved with these that I didn't want to throw work session items in on top of it. So I'll get that out to you guys for the next meeting. And I have a planning commission item coming. A public hearing item on adjustments coming your way for your next meeting. So I know we have a public hearing coming up. And the form-based code is, just real quick, the form-based code is going to the city council on the 17th. And the annexation could very well end on the 17th as well, because we've only got two more meetings with the council. Three. We have the two meetings in November, and then we've got the one in
December
on December 1st, and that's it. We're committing all of the balance of the South Beach projects, so we're really working on urban renewal stuff right now. I think I mentioned to a few of you, we got formal approval from ODOT to put the signal in at 40th and 101, which was a big deal. It's hard to meet the state's warrants, as we just had a conversation about with Windhaven. We can't get there up there. But we were able to demonstrate it at 40th and 101, and so that we have a RFP on the street as right now for design and construction of that signal. That's going to be about $3.4 million is what we have budgeted for that. That's how much signals cost these days.
Just amazing.
Explains all roundabouts.
Roundabout was even more expensive in terms of what the number was on that, because of just where that's at.
Oh. Location. Okay.
It's a location issue.
Yeah.
So
that means they'll never put a light up on 73rd.
No, 70, we haven't got there yet, 73rd. We're going to be a long way away.
So anyway, they did have the formal, a number of formal ribbon cuttings that our electeds, the mayor and others went to. So OSU Student Housing now is formally open, the 77 units over there. In the Wilder area. We also had Samaritan and their drug and alcohol rehab up in Agate Beach, had their ribbon cutting, and that's now formally opening up. And the last one was today, and that's the ODF, City of Newport Joint Fire Facility up in your neck of the woods. That one was today. And so ODF is going to start outfitting that. They already are, but they're going to do a little bit of a slow transition from Toledo. So that's what I have for you.
And they're under construction on the...
Good job, man.
We're done.
Now, when I went up there to Windhaven, I go, God dang, the construction's going full bore. They have trucks in there, you know, just big old honking trucks, you know, and big...